no sense.
Last week when we were talking about the fact that God has called us to live into and out of what we refer to as the Great Commission, to go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And in Acts, he tells us that we are to be his witnesses. So the question becomes, how do we do that? What does it mean for us to be evangelists? Now, here's the problem. As soon as I say the word evangelist, chances are there are certain images that pop into your head. You hear the word evangelist, you might think of these two people. Or you might think of this guy, the street preacher. Or you might think of this guy standing in a crowded area handing out pamphlets. Or you might think of this individual, the door-to-door guy. Now, truth be told, I have personally participated in two of those forms of evangelism. I've never done the televangelist thing. I don't have the hair to pull it off. I have never been a street preacher. Just never did that before. I have been that guy that handed out tracts and tried to enter into conversation with people. I have gone door to door. And I can't tell you how effective those programs were. No, seriously, I can't tell you how effective they were. Because they weren't. Now, I'm not here to try to limit what God can and cannot do. And if we had a big sharing time, chances are there would be enough stories in this room of how a person's life was impacted through a televangelist or a street preacher or handing out tracts or going door to door. Yes, there are those stories, and God has used those modes of evangelism from time to time. Problem is, for most people, your average run-of-the-mill Jesus follower, to tell them to go do those four things would be so unnatural for them that they become completely paralyzed and petrified and they don't do it. Now, God can do those things. God can use those things. But when it comes to living into and out of the Great Commission to go and make disciples of all nations, could it be that we have overcomplicated it and made it too difficult for most people to actually do? Perhaps living into and out of the Great Commission is as simple as 3, 2, 1. I mentioned it last week, 3, 2, 1. 3, 2, 1 was something that I helped develop at the church I was at in Washington. And it's not a program. 3, 2, 1 is simply a call to be increasingly intentional in the relationships that we have. 3, 2, 1. If you've got this and you're one of those people that really enjoys filling in blanks, hey, today's your day, because we're going to do some blank filling in, because here's all 3, 2, 1 is. What is 3, 2, 1? It is identify three people that are already in your life that are currently not following Jesus, and your job with them is bless them. Identify three people that you already know. And this is the beautiful thing about the threes. You already know them. They're your neighbors, your coworkers, your classmate, the doctor that you see regularly, the person at Starbucks that is there every time that you're there and you've already gotten to know them. It could be a family member. You don't need to go seeking these people out. God is already at work in people's lives, and God has already put you into their lives. Half the work is already done. You don't need to make cold calls. You don't need to go door to door. Can God use that? Sure. But identify three people that you are already in relationship with that are currently not following Jesus, and your job with them, bless them. And we'll get into the how to do that in just a little bit. Twos, identify two people currently following Jesus. Your job with them, mentor them. You might want to use the word disciple them, do life with them. But identify two people that are currently following Jesus, and your job, mentor them. And we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. Which brings us to the one, identify one person that is mentoring you. Hugely important, most often ignored, but identify one person in your life that is mentoring you. That's all 3-2-1 is. Identify three people that are already, you're already in relationship with, that are not following Jesus, bless them. Identify two people that are currently following Jesus, mentor them. Identify one person that is mentoring you. That's all 3-2-1 is. Now, you might be wondering, how do you do this? Okay, we can work on that a little bit, but I will warn you up front. This is intentionally simple. There will be opportunities that we have in the months to come to maybe do some training and some equipping, but we are intentionally keeping this very simple because as soon as it becomes more and more involved, more and more people go, that's too much. I can't do it. I'm not good enough. I'm out. And at that moment, we stop living into and out of the Great Commission. And so this is intentionally simple. Don't need to overcomplicate it. So how do you work with a three? With your threes, what you want to do is you want to live a 1 Peter 3:15 kind of life. If you're curious what 1 Peter 3:15 says, here it goes. Starts out this way. It says, in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer for anyone who asks for the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. The first thing we need to do in relationship with our threes, with those three people that are currently not following Jesus, is make the decision and commitment on our behalf to live a 1 Peter 3:15 life. 3-2-1 is not about changing other people. God changes people. The only people that we can effectively change is who? Ourselves. And so we make the commitment individually to live a 1 Peter 3:15 life. It starts out this way. In your heart, set apart Christ as Lord. Set apart Christ as Lord. What does it mean to set apart Christ as Lord? It's to acknowledge not just one time in your life when you knelt down and you prayed a prayer, but daily acknowledge that Jesus is Lord. And if Jesus is Lord, that means I'm not. If he's Lord, that makes me servant. If he's Lord, I'm the slave. If he's Lord, it means he's in charge, not me. It's about his agenda, not mine. There's a poem I learned years ago, and I've always loved it. It says, I like what I like, and you like what you like. Forget about what we like. It's all about what he likes. And he likes to be the one that's in control of our heart, of our mind, our body, and our soul. And I'm okay with that because he's the one that made me. It's not about your preference or my preference. It's about his agenda because he's Lord. And so we set apart Christ as Lord daily, saying, whatever you want is what I'm trying to want, and I will do it. In your heart, set apart Christ as Lord, which takes you to the second piece. It says, always be prepared to give an answer. And this is the moment where most people get sweaty palms. They go, I knew it. I'm going to have to talk to people. Yes, you're going to need to talk to people. But here's the thing. Most people, when they think of evangelism, they go, oh, I got to memorize every book of the Bible in order, and I got to be able to answer all kinds of really, really difficult questions, and I'm not going to be able to answer all their questions. What happens if they ask me a question and I don't know the answer? Here's your answer. I don't know. Christians are notorious as well as answering questions our culture isn't asking. I need to be prepared to argue pre-tribulation and post-tribulation. Yeah, what was the last time a non-Jesus person asked you about that? Most of you are sitting in the room, but I have no idea what you're even talking about. My point exactly. No, it says in 1 Peter 3:15, always be prepared to give an answer to what? For the reason for the hope that you have. In other words, if you are living the first part of the verse and you're setting apart Christ as Lord as your life will begin to look different. And in the context of a relationship with someone, they will notice you're kind of weird in a really nice way. And they might just ask you about it. And here's the wonderful thing when it says you need to be prepared to give an answer for the reason for the hope that you have. The answer you get to give them is your story. And here's the wonderful thing about your story. Nobody can argue with your story. They can argue maybe about some of the conclusions in your story, but they can't argue about your story. Which is great. It's not like someone's going to go, what'd you do last night? You go, I saw a movie. And they go, no, you didn't. No, it's your story. When people ask me about why it is that my life is the way it is, I get to just go, well, the way I figure it, I have experienced the love and provision of God over and over and over again in my life. And he loves me more than I deserve to be loved. And so I'm just trying to live that way. And they can't go, nuh-uh. No, we could get into a learned discussion about the divinity of Christ. And is there a time and a place for us to become increasingly equipped to share and deal with difficult issues? Absolutely. But for starters, be prepared to tell your story when somebody actually asks. Set apart Christ as Lord. Be prepared to give an answer. And then I love the end. And it says, but do this with gentleness and respect. I love the fact that it's Peter that writes this, who is a total bull in a china shop. But he goes, no, do this with gentleness and respect. Here is my free paraphrase of the last portion of the verse. We are never given permission to be part of the Jerks for Jesus Club. I don't know when it started or why it started. But too often, Christians will go, we're right, which gives me permission to treat you like dirt because you're wrong. No, we treat people with gentleness and respect. It does not mean we agree with all of their conclusions, but we're never given permission to not treat them with gentleness and respect. To live a 1 Peter 3:15 life means you set apart Christ as Lord, you're prepared to tell your story when they ask, and you treat people with gentleness and respect, always. The nice thing is, the people that you're doing this with are people you're already in relationship with. You kind of like them. It makes it even easier. But there's a little bit more with this. In addition to living a 1 Peter 3:15 life, you get to love these three people. What's it say in the Gospel of John? A new commandment I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. Best definition of the Greek word agape I've ever heard is to intelligently and intentionally do what is best for somebody else. Best definition of agape I've ever heard. So when it says we get to love people, go, wait a second, there's three people in your life that you're already in relationship with that you are going to bless, and you're going to bless them by just doing what's best for them. Great. Also, you get to bless them. That's taken out of the 10th chapter of Genesis when God is calling Abraham and God tells Abraham, I'm going to bless you so that you can be a blessing. I'm going to care for you so you can care for other people. I'm going to love on you so you can love on other people. Guess what, folks? God has blessed us tremendously. He has blessed us with a relationship with his son, Jesus Christ. He has blessed us with the presence of his spirit. He has blessed us with his word. He has blessed us with provision upon provision upon provision. He's blessed us. Now we get to bless other people. We get to pray for other people. You get to pray for those three. You get to listen and learn. Learn their story. I had a mentor once tell me, he said, Mike, God gave you two ears and one mouth. You should listen twice as much as you talk. So when you're with your threes, listen. Ask them a question and then listen. Learn their story. Hey, Where'd you grow up? What was it like when? Who was the person in your life that? And just learn their story. And then at the end of the day, this is almost worth putting on a little card next to your bedside table, because this is a question to ask yourself in regards to your threes every day. How is their life better today because of me? This is not a self-congratulatory moment. It's an accountability moment. Do you want to go, wait a second. I've identified that these are the three people in my life that I'm going to bless. Did I? How is their life better today because of me? Did I pray for them? Did I encourage them? Did I listen to them? Did I help because they had a need? How is their life better today because of me? That's what it looks like to have a three. So here's what I want to do. In a moment, we're gonna pause the sermon before we get to the twos and the ones, and we're gonna spend a little bit of time in prayer, and we're gonna do some singing, some songs that are thematically spot on to this idea. But first, I just want to show a hands. How many of you, at one point in your story, you were a three? In other words, you weren't following Jesus, but there was somebody that was intentional in your life. And they just blessed you, and they loved on you, and they prayed for you. If you were at one point in your life, go, yep, that was me. I was a three, and there was somebody that was reaching out to me. If that was you, raise your hand. It works, doesn't it? Okay, let me ask you this. How many of you, you didn't have this language to put with it, but there has been somebody in your life, go, you know what? I've had a three. There was somebody that was in my life that I just had the opportunity to bless and to love on. And at one point, I got to tell my story to them. If that was you, and you've had a three, you just didn't have that language, raise your hand. My daughter and I, Kayla, we were driving out to softball practice. She was playing on a traveling team. And I was coaching. I was one of the coaches on the team. We were driving out to practice, and she looked at me from the passenger seat. She said, Dad, why are you coaching this team this season? It was a fair question because the guy running the program was not a very likable individual. My wife is laughing right now. She knows. But she goes, why are you coaching with this team this year? And I looked over at Kayla, and I, as I'm driving, I said, well, I can think of two reasons why I'm coaching. One, I get to spend a bunch of time each week with you, and you're a great kid. And I go, but the other reason I'm coaching is because I believe that God has put our family with this team for this season so that we can change the perception. And she just looked at me with that look that said, I don't understand what you're saying, but I want to. Anyone that knows my daughter has gotten used to that look. So I said, I think we have the opportunity to change the perception. You see, when people think, and I told this to my daughter, Caleb, when people think of Christians, the first words that come up in their mind are judgmental, hypocritical, anti-this, anti-that. And in all fairness, Kayla, as Christians, we have fed into that perception rather well. I go, but God has put us on this team for this season so that we can help change the perception. I said, Kayla, we have the opportunity to live lives where we are so generous and so encouraging and so loving and so filled with grace and forgiveness that when people find out that we're Jesus followers, their brains are going to melt because they don't have a category for us. You see, the people on that team are going to go, wait a second, I thought Christians behaved this way, but the Stealth family's doing this. I go, Kayla, we have an opportunity to help change the perception. It's interesting, from that team, there were at least four different kids that ended up going on mission trips to help share the news of Jesus with other people. There were at least half a dozen parents from that team that ended up coming to our church. There was one of the other coaches on that team whose wife left him. And who did he come to share? He came to talk to me, not because I was a pastor. He came to talk to me because I had loved him and he felt safe with me. And a couple years later, when he fell in love with somebody new, who did he ask to provide marital counseling? Who got the opportunity to officiate at one of the most irreverently beautiful services I've ever been a part of? It took years. But it was so worth it to have a three and invest in a life. Would you close your eyes, please? We're going to spend a little moment in prayer. It's not me necessarily praying. I'd like us to be praying. So here's some things to be praying about. You might want to just silently ask, God, who are the people in my life that I'm already in relationship with that are currently not following Jesus that I can bless? You might want to pray, God, am I currently living a 1 Peter 3:15 life? Am I setting apart you as Lord? Do I have the courage to share my story? Am I treating people with gentleness and respect? God, help me to be a 1 Peter 3:15 type of person. Help me to be the kind of person that is able to bless my threes. Let's continue to worship.
Amen.
All right, go ahead and grab a seat, you guys. There was a line that we just got through singing, and it said, so take me as you find me, all my fears and failures, fill my life again. I give my life to follow everything I believe in. Now I surrender. And that takes us to what does it look like? We're going to get there. Which takes us to me audibly leading you through all of this. Which takes us to, what do we do with our twos? It starts out this way. What you need to do is lead a Hebrews 10 type of life. Lead a Hebrews 10 type of life. Hebrews 10 says, and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another all the more as we see the day approaching. Once again, we're just going to break this down and you're going to see the things that it takes for us to lead a Hebrews 10 type of life. First thing, consider how to spur. It says, consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Remember, a two is somebody that is currently following Jesus that you get to mentor or disciple. And the first thing you can do is actually consider what would be the best thing for them. How can I come alongside this person? What do they need? Consider how you may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. The next bit says, let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing. Meet regularly. When I work with parents, I always have to help them learn how to spell the word love. I'll ask a parent, how do you spell love? To which they say, L-O-V-E. To which I say, wrong. The way you spell love is T-I-M-E. That's how you spell love in working with your kid. You show up. I've had parents over the years tell me, they go, well, we're more into quality time than quantity time. To which I say, quantity time is quality time. Show up. If you're mentoring someone, meet regularly. Show up. And then it says, and let us encourage one another all the more as we see the day approaching. Encourage. Anyone that has worked with me on a ministry team, and we got some friends with us from Washington that I think you guys have served. We've been on ministry teams in like four different countries together, and we've done all kinds of stuff. They have heard me say over and over and over again, our primary job in mentoring people is to encourage, encourage, and encourage. And when we're done doing that, we encourage. I have yet to meet somebody that has ever told me, I am so tired of being encouraged. I've had it to hear with encouragement. No, we encourage. It's amazing what happens to a person's life when they are simply encouraged. Consider how you may spur what is best for them. Show up and encourage and encourage and encourage. Unfortunately, when it comes to this idea of mentoring, too often Christians' approach has been this. I am super Christian, here to enlighten you with the glow of my wonderfulness. You know, there's this attitude that to mentor someone means that you've got everything figured out and your life is perfect. Well, guess what? People that have everything figured out and are perfect are very unattractive people. Think about it. When you're surrounded by someone who's just putting off the airs of, I've got it figured out, and maybe one day with hard work, you can be like me. Boy, aren't you attracted to those folk? No, that's not how we mentor someone. One, it's unattractive. Two, it's intimidating. I like what Henry Nouwen says in his book, In the Name of Jesus, which might be one of the best books on Christian leadership I've ever seen. He writes, the Christian leader of the future is called to be completely irrelevant and to stand in this world with nothing to offer but his or her own vulnerable self. Laying down your life, making your own faith and doubt, hope and despair, joy and sadness, courage and fear available to others as a way of getting in touch with the Lord of life. Be authentic. You have two people that you've identified that are currently following Jesus that you get to mentor. Be authentic. Be real with them. With all your fears and failures. The early covenanters, when the covenant church was first starting in the late 1800s, the covenant church began with basically a bunch of small group Bible studies in Sweden. And when these people would gather together in these homes, the question that was routinely asked is the one up on the screen right now. How goes your walk with Christ? That was at the very center of what it looked like to be a covenanter. People gathering together and somebody going, how goes your walk with Christ? And then share. If all you do with your two is consider how you can help, show up, encourage, and ask that question and have authentic conversation, you will have made a significant difference in someone's life. Which takes us to our one. Remember, a one is identify one person that is mentoring you. And I'll tell you this up front. It's the hardest one to do. And in all my years in working with people, and when I see somebody just their life go off the rails morally and such, there's one consistent factor. They do not have a one. There's nobody speaking into their life. There's nobody that they are coming clean with. There's nobody that's helping them not live in the shadows. To have a one means that you're kind of living into Exodus 18. If you're not familiar with Exodus 18, it's that moment where Moses, they've led the people out of Egypt, they've gone through the Red Sea, and then he comes up to his father-in-law, Jethro. And it says in Exodus 18 that he bowed down before Jethro, and then he told Jethro all of what had been taking place. And then he said, and then Jethro says, well, what are you currently doing? He goes, well, I'm doing this thing where I'm standing as judge over all the people. And Jethro looks at him and says, that's a bad idea. I think what you're doing is going to wear you out. Let me suggest another way. And Moses goes, okay. Hey, to have a one means that you get to be a Moses and you need to have a Jethro. Someone that you can come before and humble yourself before that person. and share what's going on in your life, practicing the word up there is courageous authenticity. I contend that there is no substantial growth without courageous authenticity. You hide things, you do not grow. Practice courageous authenticity with your one. It should go without saying that that needs to be a place where there's confidentiality. Just establish that up front. What's said between the two of us stays between the two of us. Share what's going on in life. And then, as they share what God's laid on their heart for you, have the humility and courage to respond like Moses did. Three, identify three people in your life that are currently not following Jesus. Bless them. Two, identify two people in your life that are currently following Jesus. Mentor them. One, find one person to mentor you. Just a show of hands. How many of you have ever mentored somebody? It could be someone in a small group, in just a professional relationship, a ministry team where you had some people under you. How many of you have ever felt like you have walked alongside someone and mentored them? A whole bunch in there. How many of you have ever been mentored? You can go, this was someone that I was a Moses to and they were my Jethro. Every person that's got their hand up right now goes, you know what? I'm willing to bet the vast majority have said that was one of the most important relationships you've had in your life. Let's go ahead and pray. And as we go to prayer, I'm just going to lead us in prayer like we did a few moments ago. And as I pray and make this your prayer as well, God, who are the people in my life that I can be building into? God, give me the courageous authenticity to do that well. God, who is somebody in my life that might be able to mentor me? God, help us to be a church that is molded by our commitment to do 3, 2, 1. Help us to be a church that is spurred by your call to go and make disciples of all nations and to bear witness to the reality of who you are and what you have done. God, help us to be intentional in our relationships. Father, this is not about a church growth strategy, but it's our desire to be obedient and courageous and humble. So, Father, we offer you our 3, our 2, our 1.